So if you feel like Paul, that you're not doing what you want to be doing, and someday you're going to get around to it, you came to the right place, because today we're talking about how do you make and enjoy permanent lasting change. So we want to welcome you today. For those of you who are guests, visitors, we're glad that you're here. Welcome. And we also want to welcome those joining us at Steiner Ranch. Hey, Steiner Ranch. And also for those people who are going to be joining us this afternoon at Lakeline PM, we welcome you as well. And we've been in this series called Waiting for Someday. What we found is many of us will say things to ourselves like, someday I'm going to go where I want to go. Someday I'm going to do what I want to do. Someday I'm going to have what I want to have. Someday I'm going to be who I want to be. The problem with that is there are 7 days in a week, and someday is not one of them. And so is it possible to actually move Sunday up into today and the things that are most important to me to enjoy them today? In other words, if you were told that you had a shortened period of time to live, if someone said you only have a year to live, or maybe even 30 days, or maybe even 24 hours, how would that change you? And if that would change your priorities, not your bucket list, but your priorities, if that would change your priorities, why would we not start today living those priorities, those values, those relationships, those things that are important to us? Now, when it comes to succeeding, I know all of you have observed that people set out in life to do certain things, and some people just are stellar at it. They become accomplished, they're good at it, and other people, they just become mediocre. Have you ever wondered what the difference is, or why some people do really well and some people don't? David Brooks, in a book that he wrote a couple years ago called The Social Animal, cited a particular study that gave some insight into this question. In this particular study, 157 children who were planning to play an instrument were surveyed, studied, and evaluated. Some of those children played for a couple years and then dropped out. Some of them played for a while and they became kind of mediocre, okay musicians. And some of them, they played excellently. They went on to become incredible musicians. And so the researchers studied all the different factors. Was it IQ? Was it the oral senses? Was it mathematics, rhythm, socioeconomic? What was it that separated those who became mediocre or didn't do well at all from those who did extraordinarily well? And here was the one common denominator. It was actually a question that was asked before the children picked their instruments. And here was the question. How long do you plan to play? Children who answered, well, I plan to play for a few years, typically did the worst, in fact, dropped out. Children who said, well, I think I'm going to play for a while, they did okay. They became kind of mediocre, average musicians. But the children who said, oh, I'm planning to play for the rest of my life. I'm going to be a musician. Based on all different IQ skill levels, socioeconomic backgrounds, rhythm, different abilities, those children just blew everybody away in their ability. You see, what was going on with them is they made a commitment to an identity that actually changed the way they lived today. Many of us don't really realize that what we're doing today is actually the life we're going to be living in tomorrow. And so we don't think in terms of who am I, what is my identity, who am I becoming, and then how does that manifest itself in me today? Make commitments around the person that you're committed to be. Now, Jesus addressed this with his followers. If you'll grab a Bible and turn to Luke chapter 6, in this very poignant passage, Jesus dealt with this issue for those who would be followers of Jesus. And he's preaching the sermon, and the crowds are gathering around him. And while he's preaching the sermon and the crowds are gathering around him, there's a lot of ameners out there. There are people that are going, ooh, man, that's really good. I wish the technology would have been developed so I could tweet that. It was awesome what he just said. Carve it on my little stone here. Pass it around. What he just said was amazing. I've never heard a teacher teach like this. His wisdom, his insight, his connection with God is overwhelming. And Jesus comes to the end of his sermon and says to the group, verse 46, those of you who've done DWAP, you know this verse, right? Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. And then he gives two basic little illustrations to show the difference between the Lord, Lord, but let me live my life my way, and the Lord, Lord, I'll live my life your way crowd. Here's what he says, verse 48. He, the one who puts it into practice, is like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck that house, but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed, and its destruction was complete. Now, before we talk about the illustration of the story here, let's go back to Jesus' original question. In verse 46, he asked the question, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Essentially, what Jesus is pointing out is that our good intentions, as good as they may seem to us at the time, actually deceive us. They deceive us into thinking that because we feel it, because we want it, because we like it, because we enjoy it, because we would want to follow Jesus, do what he says, that somehow we are doing it. It's like this. How many of you are teachers here? Got a lot of teachers here. Good people, right? Teachers. So here's what it would be like. Your student's saying to you, are you saying to your students, why do you call me teacher, teacher, and do not do the homework I gave you? Or why do you call me coach, coach, and do not run the plays that I send in? Or why do you call me doctor, doctor, and do not take the prescription medication that I gave you? It's like, it's kind of silly, right? You go to the doctor and you say, doctor, I'm going to put myself under your direction to get healthy. And the doctor says, here's what you do. You know, take these three pills and call me in the morning. And you say, I don't think I'm going to do that. Well, why do you call him doctor, doctor? I'm not going to study the lesson. Well, why do you say teacher to your teacher? Because the teacher's just symbolic. When Jesus says, why do you call me Lord, Lord? The word Lord there is a title of authority. In other words, when I listen to you, Jesus, you have the words of life. I want your life. I want your experience. I want your connection to God, but I'm not planning to do anything with it. Now, all throughout the pages of Scripture, we're challenged not to let our good intentions cloud our thinking, but to live in reality. And so when Jesus says the most important thing is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, we oftentimes do something different. And that's why in the chapter on love in 1 Corinthians 13, listen to what Paul writes. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men and angels, in other words, if the words that come out of my mouth are the most eloquent, beautiful, unbelievable words ever spoken, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, if I'm the most knowledgeable in religion, if I have the most faith in religion, if I got the most of that in my head, he says, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, if I am completely sacrificial with all my life, but I have not love, he says, I gain nothing. It doesn't make any difference what our intentions are. It's what are we doing with them? Are we actually obeying Jesus and doing what he says to do? Here's the danger. I love Jesus because when it comes time to worship, I'm all in. Jesus, 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 you're the most wonderful. I sing the loudest. I jump up and down the most. I'm all in. Call a prayer meeting. I'll show up and I'll say, Lord, 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 Lord. Anytime somebody needs advice, I will give them a Bible verse and share the Bible verse with them. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm not making my decisions on the basis of the words of Jesus, what he tells me to do with my life. Not being obedient to him. Oftentimes, it's, Jesus, I love you. You are my Lord and my Savior. I'll see you next Sunday. And the rest of the week, he's forgotten. He's forgotten. It's not our intentions. In fact, our intentions can actually deceive us. Look at what he says. He goes on to say, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Verse 47, I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. What Jesus is calling us to is specific daily commitment to obey his teaching and make that part of our life. Now, one of the things we need to understand is that as he goes on and begins to talk about these two people, the analogy he uses is building a house. One's building a house and the foundation's shaky. One's building a house and the foundation's good. We'll come back and talk to you in a minute about how to build a solid foundation. But what he's really using this for is a metaphor to talk about their individual lives. One man is building his life in a certain way for a certain result and outcome, built on a certain set of assumptions and behaviors. Another one's building his life in another way. And you know what? All of us are building our lives. All of us are building our lives. Each and every day, you get this 24 hours, and you're going to live that. You're building your life. Here's what we don't understand a lot of times. The life that we're building today is the life we're going to live in tomorrow. The commitments we make today will shape what tomorrow is like in our future. That's why we can't wait for someday. We've got to bring someday into today. In other words, what he's saying here is the foundation of tomorrow is laid today. The foundation of tomorrow is laid today. Now here's the challenge. The challenge is the C word is a hard word to embrace. The word commitment, that's a scary word. And a lot of us, when we hear the word commitment, like I'm going to commit my day, my time, my life to a specific course of action. For a lot of us, what we actually think when we think commitment is this word right here. We think limits. If I make commitments, then what I'm saying is I'm saying no to lots and lots and lots of opportunities. So we look at the door of commitment that once I say I'm in, and I step through the door of commitment and the door slams behind me, what I like back here is gone, never to have again. And I don't want to limit my options, limit my freedoms. So when it comes to this door of commitment, let me just kind of share how I began to understand a little bit about this idea of commitment. When I was in high school, my brother was ahead of me. He came back from college one weekend, and he brought a friend with him, and his friend brought his guitar. And his friend was a good guitar player, and he played the guitar, and this was back in the day when people sat around the campfire and somebody played the guitar and everybody kind of sang along. You know, now today, you sit around the campfire and everybody's got their earbuds in listening to their own individual music, texting their friends as they have a communal experience, right? And kind of that's kind of the way it happens today. But back then, we didn't have that stuff. So like somebody played and everybody sang. It was cover before cover was really cover, right? And nobody knew what that was. There was no keek back then, so nobody actually knew what that was. And so that was common. And I happened to notice that this guy, like, he was singing the common songs, the songs that were playing on the radio, and he'd gather people, everybody wanted to sit around, listen to him, sing along with him. I also noticed that my girlfriend was paying a lot more attention to him than she was to me. And so, you know, being the really brilliant person I am, I thought to myself, well, maybe I should learn to play the guitar. Maybe that would be a good thing. I could pick up the guitar. I could start playing it. Well, I figured out pretty quickly that you actually have to practice to be able to play the guitar. And I started thinking about it. You know, in high school, I'm kind of calculating in my head. I'm probably going to have to play an hour a day or maybe more. If I want to get my girlfriend back, I'm probably going to have to play more than that. And so I started thinking about what it would look like to make the commitment to play. And all I could see was limits. For example, the hour a day that I could be playing, I could be playing basketball too. And if the guys called and there was a game, man, I didn't want to give up that option. That hour needs to be available because if there's a game to be played, I'm getting in that game. I also thought about growing up in Michigan, if there was ever a day that the sun came out, which was rare, but if it happened, I didn't want to be tied down with a commitment to practice. I could throw on my stuff, head out the backyard, out into the fields, and I could be hunting in no time. Now, I know you guys are thinking, like, he just killed little animals? Yes, but we were poor. We needed to eat them. Isn't that what the hunter in your life tells you? Don't believe it. And technology was beginning to develop. In 1977, the year I graduated from high school, the Atari 2600 console came out, and Space Invaders came home. Some of you remember this. Some of you say, I don't remember this. All I remember was Pong. You're really old. So, like, I had to perfect the art of being able to push this red button while I manipulated this little, you know, little joystick here. So there was certainly no way that I could have limited those freedoms to be able to commit to play the guitar. Now, here's what I didn't understand at the time. That when you open the door of commitment that limits your freedom, you always find a new set of freedoms. Because whatever you're moving toward also opens up doors that you would never experience if you stay with your options. Stepping through the door of commitment to play the guitar, now suddenly I have some new freedoms. I can play and sing along. I could write some music. I could get my girlfriend back. I could form a band. I could play in worship. All of those things were limited to me had I not made the commitment to play. Now, at 17, I didn't have that insight. And so, today, I don't have that freedom. I don't have that freedom. And at 17, it was like, well, someday these things will not be important to me. Someday those options will go away. Someday I'll do that. And guess what? Someday's never come. The question I'm raising for us is this. What are the freedoms that you have limited yourself from being able to own and experience? What are the identities that you love to be about you, but because you're keeping your options open, you don't want to commit, then you find yourself actually more limited. Everybody's got limitations and everybody has freedom. The question is, do you have freedom for the things that you believe are important and you value? Or do you have freedom for the things that are just marking time? Alan Goodman, a columnist for the Seattle Times, talks about those things in these words. She says, keep all options open. Never make a commitment to anything unless absolutely forced to do it. Ellen Goodman, a syndicated columnist, calls this person a, quote, options tender, unquote. This person works carefully at his job, but always has a resume out. Others value commitment. He values options. His father had obligations. He has freedom. Where his father had a wife and three children, a mortgage, and a vice presidency, he has options. Then she wonders, at what point do options become emptiness? I want to challenge you guys. We have the ability now with technology to fill the hours of unspent options, to give us a sense that actually it was okay that we didn't commit, that we didn't follow through, because something was there to fill our time. Ever since the series 24 came out, binge watching is a normal pastime. Spending hours and hours, weekends, filling up time, just watching something over and over again. Every moment can be filled by some form of electronic entertainment, but you have to ask yourself the question, what do I get out of this? Have I gained new freedom? Have I grown? Have I invested in the things that Jesus says are important? Or have I just kept my options open? A lot of us are not willing to invest relationally. We don't want to join a small group. Because we don't want to commit another evening a week. Because what if something good comes up on that evening? Or what if I'm tired? Or what if things get hard? Or what if somebody in the group's kind of weird? All of those reasons, you know? Like, so I'm just going to keep this time open. I am not going to commit to this. Here's something that's very important for us to understand. You don't find friends. You make friends. You don't discover community. You become community. Relationships are developed when people are willing to invest enough face time with other people that they find out who that person really is at the core of who they are, and those people find out who you really are at the core of who you are, and over time, those develop into deep personal connections. But many of us are like, oh, I don't know, something might come up and I might not be able to do that. And so therefore, I'm going to tend my options. And what I do is I still have free time, or I still have an open slot. I have that. But what I've lost out is the freedom to know and be known, to have people speaking into my life, to have people that God is using to work on the inside of me. I give that up. I don't have that. And loneliness sets in. Loneliness sets in. One of the things that's very important to understand is that we do not grow into commitment. We grow from commitment. We make a decision to change our identity. This is who I am going to be. And from there we begin to grow as we act upon it each and every day. If we say, I think something's important and someday I'm going to be committed to it, you'll never find yourself being committed to it. NASA has a term that they use when a space shuttle is being launched. It's called the point of negative return. Negative return is that place where the space shuttle reaches a distance and a speed where if the engines failed, it could not turn around and come back to the place where it was launched from. It feels a little bit like a scary term when they say you have reached negative return. Unless, of course, you're an astronaut and your goal is to actually get into orbit. Because at that point of negative return, that is also the point where the speed has been reached and the height has been reached and the trajectory has been reached that orbiting the Earth is guaranteed at that point. And really, that's why you go into space, right? The same thing is true with Jesus. When you say to Jesus, I'm going to call you Lord, Lord, and I'm going to follow you, you reach a point of negative return where from this point forward, my life is committed to him, to follow him, and really, isn't that what you want? I've laid things behind, and I can't go back. Think about what happens. The reason why we don't break bad habits is because we don't want to quit doing the behavior. We just want to take the socially accepted edge off of it to say, I am no longer going to be the person who's controlled by you fill in the blank. I don't know if I want to go that far. And that's why our habits continue. The reason why we lose friendships or don't have lasting friendships is because we're not planning to be with this person, to hang out with this person, to commit to them for a lifetime. We're simply saying, hey, I'll hang out with you the next time it's convenient. And it's not convenient. And a year goes by, 2 years go by, 3 years go by, friendship is gone. The investment is gone. Same thing happens in marriages. When marriage partners say, I will love you until I meet the love of my life, and you guys know this because when marriages break up over a third party, that's usually what is being said, right? I met the love of my life. Rather than, no, this is not about a third party. This is about you and me. So a commitment that changes my identity is a commitment that's worthy of today. Now, let's look at how Jesus explains this. You look at the first person. He says, the person who hears my words and puts them into practice, he's like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid a foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck the house, but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like the man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. So let's talk about man B, the one who hears the word but doesn't do anything with it, doesn't put it into practice. That man is like a man who just kind of comes up and levels the ground, levels the dirt, and right on the sand, right on the gravel, he begins to put down his flooring. He begins to erect his walls. He puts the ceiling on his house. Now remember, this is his life. So what is the sand under which he's building? Well, following the analogy, it would be hearing the words of Jesus but choosing to live a different way. And so then you ask yourself the question, well, what would the different way be? Well, the different way would be something like this. What is everybody else living like? How do they govern their lives? What do they do with their time? What do my parents think? What do my neighbors think? What do my friends think about life? What are my personal preferences? What are my personal desires? Any other way of living besides the way that Jesus prescribes is this shallow foundation of shifting sand. In contrast to that, it says that the other guy came to the same place, he leveled it out, but then he began to dig down deep. In fact, the wording of the text actually implies he dug down, he dug deeper until he hit the rock. Now, how many of you have ever dug a ditch before? Yeah, about seven of you. You guys wonder why it takes four people to dig a ditch? And once you try to dig one, you realize it takes four people to dig a ditch. It's not easy to do, especially when it's 102 degrees outside. This guy worked to clear away the same material that this other guy built his house on. So if the things that the guy built his house on over here were the things of popular culture, people's opinion, this is how you should spend your money in this world, this is how people raise their kids, these are the kind of activities and lifestyle we should be involved in, all of the conventional wisdom, this man over here, he dug through all of that. And it takes work. It's very important. It takes work to understand that if you want to build your life on Jesus Christ, there are going to be things that everybody else is saying, hey, do it this way. This is real life. You're going to have to dig through all that. You'll have to be different. There'll be things about you that don't work in the world the way everybody else is working. He dug down through that to where he could find something solid. And what's solid here is the foundation of God himself. That the words that Jesus speaks to us are actually life words. They're a better way. They're more stable. And so in the end, when the storm comes and the flash flood comes roaring through and all the sand under this guy's house washes out and it just collapses, the other guy had the sand wash away, fine, let that all go, because I've got something more stable than that. I am founded on the rock. In other words, what he's saying here is really asking us this question. Is your life actually built to last? Is it actually built to last? Because the only thing that will actually last are the words of God lived out in our lives. So the question Jesus is asking, for those of you who claim to be his followers, are you willing on a daily basis to live as one of my disciples? That's who you are, your identity. And today you're actually willing to live that way. You say, Tim, I don't know. I don't know. It seems like there are lots of words in the Bible. Like Jesus says a lot of things and I don't know all the things he says. And it seems like my life is pretty complicated. Like I got a lot going on in my life. There are people depending on me. There's stuff I've got to do, things I got to get done. There's all these options out there. Like, how do I do this? Well, let me make it really easy for you guys, because this series is intensely practical. I want you guys to be able to take the Bible and have something very concrete to do with it. I want you to write down three words. Three words. Write these three words down, because these are the words that are going to be the launch pad for you this week to do what Jesus tells you to do. Here are the three words: time, money, or possessions, and people. Time, money, and people. Now, the reason why I picked those three words is because they pretty much summarize most of the experience of life. My time is that which is given to me as a gift by God, and I have to use it. It goes away every day. I have to use it. The resources that I have, my possessions, my money, the stuff that I have that belongs to me, that's the world around me. This is the physical world. So how am I relating to the physical world, particularly the part that I have some control over? The third one, people. These are the relationships. These are the important ones that God has created in his image. And no matter how distasteful they are to you at times, these are the people that God says are important. So here's the question. Is there anything I know that Jesus wants with my time that I can obey? Anything. Now, I don't think you need to spend the rest of the week studying to try to figure out what this is. I think most of us, whether you've been in the faith for 10 days or whether you've been in the faith for 10 years, you know that there's some things that Jesus would say are priorities with your time, okay? Is there anything that I know right now that I could apply today with my time that would be being obedient to Jesus that would actually make my life better? With my resources. When it comes to my resources, is there any way I'm handling my resources or anything I should be doing that does not reflect what Jesus would say to me that I can do something about that today? When it comes to my relationships, the people in my life, are there any relationships that I need to adjust or things I need to do different, or things I need to fix, or things I need to communicate today, because to love my neighbor as myself would mean, to love people like God loves people would mean just whatever that is. In other words, if you'll just pick one from each of these categories and say, okay, I'm going to give this a try. Lord, I'm going to do what you say this week. Now, some of you are going to say, well, yeah, I know what he wants me to do. That's really hard. It's like digging a ditch, right? It's like digging a ditch while you're digging a ditch, and that guy over there is waving at you going, man, you're killing yourself. There's an easier way. There's an easier way. And then you hear that crack, and the lightning flashes, and the thunder roars, and the raindrops begin to fall. There is an easier way. It's just not a good way. Would you be willing today to begin to act like a disciple of Jesus with very specific things? Because it will rock your world. Now, for some of you, you say, I don't know, man, that is so limiting to me. I just want to tell you, don't forget about the freedom. And so, in the morning when you get up and you check all your electronic communication and read the news, every day, you got phones by your bed, you pick it up, you go through, you read the news, check Facebook, see who emailed you, you start working through your work day. In the morning when you do that, what if you just said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to exchange that for time with God. I'm going to take that first 15, 20, 30, 40, those of you on Facebook, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. I'm going to set that aside, and I'm going to step into the freedom of a deeper understanding of the person of God. I'm telling you, it will change your world. It will rock your world. For some of you, making a commitment to get deeper in relationships with people, some kind of discipleship, small group, or service, getting involved in where you're serving, being more generous, those things are going to change you. And for some of you who are new to this whole thing, you say, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't call Jesus Lord, Lord. That seems really restrictive. That would mean that I'm not Lord, Lord. And frankly, I'm pretty comfortable with me being Lord, Lord. Here's what you're missing. You have no idea what it's like to put your hands in the hands of the wise God of the universe, who loves you so deeply that he was willing to show up on this planet by sending his son Jesus to bear the penalty for your sin. You don't know that yet. And when you do, you're going to say, why did I wait? So much better to have the all-knowing God leading my life than me. I want us to have a chance to respond, and so I'm just going to ask you to bow your head. Don't let the person next to you distract you. Just spend a moment saying, God, what's my next step? What's my next step here today? I've invested time coming to listen. I believe your Spirit is speaking to me. What is my next step? Let him speak to you right now.